We were recently featured in The Telegraph. It's amazing how many people discovered us for a small company like ours. It really does make a huge difference.
Welcome to another episode of Communicating Purpose. I'm John Higginson, founder of purpose-led communications agency Higginson Strategy, and I believe that the best way to get a message across is by talking about something you honestly and passionately believe in. By doing so, you bring people with you. Your passion becomes theirs, and I call this the power of purpose. Today, I'm joined by Brian Spencer, marketing manager at Tap Social Movement. Tap Social is an Oxford-based brewery that employs prisoners and prison leavers. Since 2017, Tap Social has provided more than 80,000 hours of paid work to prisoners on day release and prison leavers. Specifically targeting prisoners and ex-prisoners as employees increases confidence in them and reduces reoffending. Before working for Tap Social, Brian spent 10 years as a freelance travel writer in Singapore. He created the craft beer blog Beer Travelist, which won a number of awards over the years. Brian, it's a pleasure to have you on the show. I can hear that you are speaking to me from your brewery, and we can hear lots of sounds of clanking kegs in the background. Just tell us a bit more about your own background and how you got involved with Tap Social.
Sure. Thanks for having me on, John. As you noted, I have a background in journalism. During COVID, the travel writing understandably dropped off quite a bit. And at that point, I've been writing a lot about beer. Most of my focus at that point has been writing about the emerging beer scene, craft beer scene in Southeast Asia specifically. And so at that point, during COVID, I kind of made the decision that I would really like to be involved in the industry instead of just only writing about it.
Now, I don't know if Higginson Strategy employs any ex-prisoners, because I don't ask my employees and I don't consider it my business. I believe absolutely rightly that if someone serves time and they are punished, and that's the end of it, and it isn't any employer's business after that. And in the UK, we have a law that says that even if I did ask them, they don't have to tell me. And I think that's absolutely right. And I know that some countries, such as America, feel that you can just carry on punishing people for the rest of their lives if they've once committed a crime. But you are specifically trying to employ ex-prisoners. And have you found any differences with employing people from the general public?
That's a great question, John. You know, in terms of secondary punishments, you've mentioned that the punishment continues after prison. You know, here in the UK, there are secondary punishments. For example, you know, every single beer in our range is named after a specific issue that we kind of identify for people coming out of prison. For example, False Economy references the fact that when prisoners leave, they are given a pittance, essentially, to restart their lives. A lot of people don't have housing. They don't have settled accommodations. In those cases, sometimes they're given a tent, and they're kind of just sent on their way. It's very hard to rebuild and to kind of restart your life when you don't have any support. And so we consider those things secondary punishment. Another beer is time better spent. A lot of people spend up to 22 hours a day locked in their cell. When they leave, they've not had kind of education while they serve their time. And unsurprisingly, people, almost 50%, end up reoffending within a year. We think that instead of spending 22 hours a day locked in a cell, time better spent would be in education, preparing for jobs, preparing for life after prison. So, you know, that doesn't exactly answer your point specifically, but there are secondary punishments in terms of preparing people for their lives after prison. Now, in terms of, you know, your point of asking people, you know, about their background and whether they have a criminal background, one of the things that I really appreciate about Tap Social and the way that we operate is everyone is treated equally. So there's not a stigma to someone who is coming to us from the prison side of things. I don't even know most of the time whether it's someone from the public or it's, you know, someone who's coming out of prison. There's not an announcement is what I'm saying internally. Like, everyone's treated equally, which I think is really great. And I think that speaks to your point about it's not really anyone's business.
Yeah. And under the Reoffenders Act, you wouldn't even legally be allowed to ask them, to be honest. It's for them. If it's a spent conviction, in our society, we have decided that that person has served their punishment, but more importantly, they won't reoffend based on that. It's about reoffence rather than just punishment. And I think that's the important point there. So I suppose one point I was trying to get at is, because you're employing people on the basis that they either are still in prison or were in prison, are you getting employees that are almost better employees because they're kind of grateful because other companies out there aren't doing that and aren't treating them as well? Because that's what you hear from, say, Timpsons, the locksmith, mm-hmm. who have been doing this for many years. They say ex-prisoners make some of the best employees. They're very loyal, they're very hardworking, and there's a lot of other companies doing this as well.
We have a very high success rate of satisfaction working with TAP Social in terms of people coming to us from the prison side. I wouldn't feel comfortable characterizing anyone as grateful. I mean, I think people appreciate the opportunity. Everyone kind of makes their own way. And I think that to give us all the credit for someone's success post-prison, I think would be a step too far for me personally. But the guys, I will say that the guys coming out of prison have thrived. It's very rewarding to see how many guys have thrived, and whether they're still with us or they've gone on to start their own companies, they've gone on to other positions. Yes, we get great employees who work hard and I think are grateful for the opportunity. But I think that the credit really, especially considering all the factors they have going against them, goes to each individual for their success.
From your tagline, criminally good beer, to some of those names that you've mentioned, it's clear that you're using, you know, you're having some fun with puns and language to get some of that message across. You want to just tell us a bit more about how you get the message across to your customers? Because I think you have some fun with it.
Yeah, it's a fine line because, you know, we sell beer, and, you know, beer has a certain connotation. It's, you know, people who do drink like to sit back and enjoy the beer. And so I think it's a fine line that we have to walk with our branding and our messaging. As you say, that's one of the ways that we get what we do across, is with that kind of naming convention. It's on our cans. If you pick up a can and you tour around the back, you know, a lot of beers, we'll talk a lot about the hops and the yeasts and the grains that go into the beer. We have a little bit about that, but the chunk of our kind of labeling talks about a specific issue related to that name. So Home and Dry, for example, is one of our latest releases, and that talks about how a lot of people are released out of prison without settled accommodations. They don't find themselves home and dry. And so it's a fine line. We don't want to overdo it. You know, we want people to, you know, enjoy their beer and not, you know, have a beer and look at this and feel bad about the state of our prison system or, you know, such things. But we find it's a very effective way of kind of getting into the conversation and getting people talking. And, you know, as I say, each can also has a QR code that you can scan and learn more if you're so inclined. But it's a fine line that we walk. And, you know, we kind of go back and forth about how much, you know, you don't want to feel like you're exploiting the issue or anything like that. And so, yeah, we do have some fun with it. And, you know, it's I think it's been very effective for us.
Great. Tell me, what inspired your kind of transition from journalism into marketing as you are now?
You know, for my particular journey, I love the culture of craft beer. You know, as a journalist, what I always found was if you follow the craft beer trail in a given destination, you will, if you follow that trail, it leads you to good food and good people and fun experiences. And so, again, I think that with TAP Social, when you come to Oxford, you know, we put on events regularly. We work with very closely with so many partners in the community. And for me, it's a very kind of privileged thing, I think, to be involved in a company like this where it has such an impact. It's very active in the community. And so for me, it was a very easy and fortunate pivot, essentially, from journalism and writing about beer to being a part of beer and writing about it from that perspective.
Great. And as a former blogger, what are the mediums that you like now from a kind of PR perspective, i.e. radio, podcasts like this, blogs? What's the ones that you find really effective to reach audiences that really engage with you?
I love listening to podcasts. I love this medium. I'm a reader myself. You know, one of the greatest, one of the best beer publications out there in the UK right now is called Pellicle. And they do both a podcast and a blog. Very long form journalism. They write about craft beer culture and cider and other issues that are kind of related to that. And I think that a combination of a podcast with some quality writing journalism is most effective. You know, there's a really great new outlet called Thread, which is really focused on social issues, and it's focused on a kind of younger demographic. And I've been reading that quite a bit, and I love getting my news from there because it's a mix of kind of good news about good that people are doing in the world, but also kind of spotlighting issues that mainstream media doesn't explore as in depth. So
That's a good couple of tips there. What's been one of your biggest communications wins since you've joined Tap Social?
That's a great question. As much as I, and I just kind of ding the mainstream media, there's a reason that they're mainstream, because they get a lot of eyeballs and a lot of readers. And I think, you know, we were recently featured in The Telegraph, our sister bakery, which is called Proof Social Bakehouse. We were featured in The Telegraph's 15 best bakeries to visit that are worth the line. And it's amazing how many people picked that up and discovered us and have written in about us and are discovering not just the bakery, but more about what we do. And so I'll be honest with you, when you get those national mentions, which are elusive for a small company like ours, it really does make a huge difference.
You heard it first here, guys. Even for those knocking the mainstream media, they know that a good hit in the nationals still works a treat for getting people through the doors. Are there any failures you've got in your past that have proved good lessons for you?
Well, working in a brewery is a constant learning process. In terms of communications, you know, I think our biggest, I want to say failure, but when we, you know, from the brewery side, we've kind of switched up our formats recently. This sounds like a very micro issue, but we've gone from 330 cans to 440 cans over the past year and a half, 2 years, kind of a slow transition. And I think, you know, speaking about branding and our labels, we've gone under several iterations of design-wise and learned about how little design issues can make a big impact on the business. And so I think that over the last year or so, we've refined our kind of design process and messaging and our labels as we've moved to different formats. And the first ones didn't work out quite so well. They definitely needed improvement, and I'm happy to say we've improved them, and the messaging is much clearer. But, you know, it's funny for someone coming from my background who's, you know, not been in marketing for their whole life, certainly not in branding their whole life, learning about those little things that make such a huge difference on your labels has been a eye-opening and informative experience for me. That may sound very boring, but it's...
It'll be interesting if you tell us exactly what those are. Believe me, I could talk for hours on aluminium cans. We've got an aluminium can client. So for me, the reason why you'd go from a 330 to a 440 is particularly interesting, because as we know, those that don't have the kind of sizes in their head, the 440 is the size of beer can that you'd have 20 years ago in the 90s, and it would be your can of Foster's and stuff like that. And the craft beer movement generally was the one that went to the 330. And the reason for that is it made it feel like a premium product, because suddenly you were giving the beer in a smaller dose. You were saying to your customers, we know that you're not drinking this to get drunk. If you were, you'd buy a six pack of Stella for £5, and that's what you'd be doing. Or you'd buy a six pack of Foster's or one of these other mass market beers. But instead, you're paying a lot of money for craft beer. So I'm interested to hear why you've gone back up to that larger size and what the big failure was.
The big failure was a artwork that was not adjusted to the new size.
Right.
It sounds very, that's a very straightforward
answer.
You had
stretch. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. It didn't look great.
Great.
There were some other things in terms of copy, but that's the big one.
And then why the bigger size? Why have you gone bigger?
You know, it's funny because now the 440 feels like the premium size. So a lot of our peers have gone that way. If you walk into a supermarket, Waitrose, Sainsbury, any of them, you'll see that most of the craft beer, I would say even all of it, is now in 440. And so it feels more premium.
What makes a good message for you?
Succinct, to the point, and free of typos and grammatical errors.
Brian Spencer, Marketing Manager at Tap Social Movement. You've been speaking to me, John Higginson, on Communicating Purpose. If you'd like to know more about how Higginson Strategy supports purpose-led organizations, please visit higginsonstrategy.com.